thank you for agreeing to be here with me in conversation today. It's a great pleasure because he probably knows Zineb's work quite well. Zineb is an amazing artist, but also he's a great friend. And she's done amazing things with through AREA, the residency program, in terms of like promoting and nourishing new talent in Algiers. And in the introduction, it was mentioned the kind of like your interest with images and your interest with also personal history, but also the wider history of the kind of like the development and the evolution of the Maghreb and the relationship with Europe and a lot of aspects which are kind of like connected between personal and the kind of like wider political situation. I wanted to say a few things about Image Keepers, which is the work that we're going to talk about. And the work was made in 2010, and it has been shown internationally in many venues, among them the Palais de Tokyo in Paris, more recently in the Guggenheim in New York, and now it's on display at the Berardo Collection in Lisbon. So do you want to say a few things about where the work has gone and how it was received in what context it was presented?
Well, it's been, I can't recall all the shows now, but it's been to quite a lot of shows, perhaps a good 20, 25, I would say, since it went also at the Venice Biennale a while back. The context is, I mean, it depends. Some time it was an exhibition, part of a collection. Some other times it was group shows. Palais Tokyo, it was actually a solo show. But the piece was made out of an award that I won called the Saint-Mort Project Award in Paris, whereby I won this award, and as part of the award, I was given money to make work. I was given also the possibility of produce a catalogue just for the piece, and also to show it at the Palais de Tokyo. So the award was those three things, really. And that was great, because then I could straight away, as soon as I made it, show it and have also a little publication around the work. So the context depends on the touring context of the exhibitions, where it goes, and the demand, really. And, you know, you went as far as Australia to, you know, I don't know, many pieces. It hasn't gone yet in the Middle East or North Africa or the Maghreb region, but we're working on it, working on it, especially Algeria.
Yeah.
So this is my next goal. But, I mean, shall I tell a bit more about how the project was born?
Absolutely, yes. I would like to know what is the beginning, what was the beginning for you of the project and the interest in...
So in 2009, I was in Algiers with my very good friend Amina Menia, who's also an artist based in Algiers. And she told me about Safia Kwasi, the lady here, the protagonist in the video. And she said I should meet her because she had a very interesting archive collection of images of her late husband who died in 96. And she said you should see those photographs because they're nothing like the one you've seen around the Algerian War of Independence, the Algerian War. And I said to her, what do you mean there are nothing we've... Growing up in France myself, you know, I've seen a lot of photographs about the Algerian War. But of course, these photographs were very different because they were taken by an Algerian, not by a French, by an Algerian, and they were therefore taken from a very specific angle, which is the angle of being inside rather than outside. So when I met Safia and I looked at all the photographs, I was really surprised that there was nothing like I had seen before, because a lot of the photographs you find in France in the big archives, and they are very important photographs to also collect and preserve and to look at and study. But all of them were very much about often the French army being present. But this one, there was no French army because Mohamed Kwasi, so the husband of Safia, the photographer, was actually able to access places that the French or the reporters that were invited by the French couldn't access. So it was a life, basically, from 54 to 62, about, you know, the war, which was based, in the case of Algeria, between Tunis and Algeria, and the Maquis, what we call the Maquis, which is the mountains in the kind of Kabylia region. So he had access between Tunisia and the Maquis. And why Tunisia? Because Tunisia was one of the rare countries that recognized Algeria in 54. and therefore also invited the GPRA, which was the provisional government of Algeria, which was born in 54, to actually invite them to settle in Tunisia offices. So it was like a small government with a ministry of information, a ministry. I mean, all the ministries were represented there, by the way, in Tunis. So hence, he was going back and forth between Tunis and the Maquis, taking photographs. And just to finish, so when she showed me the photograph and I spoke to Safia, Safia was telling me how, you know, difficult it was for her to know that she was the keeper of such a rich and important archive, not only for Algeria, but for the history and the story of colonization really at large. And she was struggling because she didn't want it to just stay in boxes. She wanted to do something about it. You know, she wanted to give visibility to her husband as a photographer, but also to that, you know, history of the Algerian war. So I came back. I remember that night. It was, I was very shaken up by what I had seen. So I came back that evening and I couldn't sleep. I was thinking, how can we help her? How can we help Safia? Of course, the thing was to find some money to scan all the negatives and preserve them and find a place that could host them. But I decided myself, with my own means, is to make a piece of work on Safia and on her husband. And knowing that that piece would be traveling anyway, and hopefully somebody will learn about the story of Safia and Mohamed Kwasi and the archive and contact her or me to try to help one way or the other with the archive. Then that prize, that award came at the same time, you know, a few months later, so I decided to combine them together, and hence why the project was born.
That's amazing. So it's like, it's interesting because his work through the project has actually traveled, has done the same kind of like trajectory as your project. Has been shown in all these museums and different spaces, his work that obviously didn't have access to before. But one interesting aspect of what you said is that, for me, it's like that the work is very much also about Safia. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like really, you know, her memories, her own way of looking at the work of her husband, and the relationship between the two plays a really big role in the way that she narrates the history of his own history, but also the history of the war. And how did you deal with her as a, you know, she's someone who comes from a very particular background, and she kind of like has a very particular history. How did you feel when you were there interviewing her, talking to her, trying to understand how she...
So, Safia, I mean, obviously, being the wife of Mohamed Kwasi, you know, from the beginning of their marriage, really, she knew quite a lot about, you know, the photographs. So she was able to talk, you know, quite thoroughly about some of the photographs and some of the action that he had to do or photographed. So it was very interesting to ask her to speak about it. But I couldn't talk about the archive and the history of that period of time without talking also about her love story with Mohamed Kwasi, because of very, very strong together. And also, you know, him dying, and, you know, she talks about solitude, and she talks about, you know, him being ill, and she talks about when he got ill, that he never told her anything about the archive. He literally left her the archive without giving her any advice on what to do, what to not do about the archive. So, you know, so she talks about all that. So for me, when I make work often, for people who know my work, I often intertwine the personal and the political. So for me, the voice of the personal is very important. Knowing also that Safia is quite an old lady now, and knowing that at time she was forgetting or getting confused with names of the people. So, you know, although it's supposed to be factual and true what she says, because she's the only one that can talks about, you know, photograph of her husband, at the same time there is always this notion that perhaps what she says might not totally be correct, or, you know. And also there was a lot of sometimes taboos, and because she's a very modest person, always, you know, putting, you know, not really telling the things as they should be told, you know. So I thought there was a very interesting dynamic in terms of her as a woman.
Absolutely.
Because she was a mujahid, she was also a freedom fighter. I mean, she worked with her husband quite closely, apart from when he had to take photographs and he couldn't take her with her. But her role then was very different. She was like an actress in place. So the way, at the time in Tunisia, the GPRA, the provisional government, was also creating a lot of films, theater plays, a lot of kind of cultural events in order to raise awareness internationally about what was happening in Algeria. So they were creating a lot of plays, for example, in Tunis, and she was one of the actresses that would play sometimes the role of the Mujahid in the play. So there was a kind of very interesting mise en abîme within that play. But in the video, there is a whole part where I'm talking about how culture and art was used as a weapon to resist or to fight a war. And that's very important. That's why people like René Vautier, Godard, and all those kind of, you know, very important filmmakers happened to be at one point in Algeria, because they were teaching, and they were, of course, on the Algerian coast, so they were teaching, you know, the Algerian how to, you know, film and
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. So it's interesting because it's also how it comes from a background where she's functioned somehow as an artist herself, but then she's left with this kind of, like, legacy. And how about your wider family, their children? Do they have children? And how did they respond to the archive themselves?
Okay, so that's the thing. Safia doesn't have any children. So, of course, the immediate question is what will happen to the archive when she's gone.
Mm.
And hence why I knew there was an urgency to very quickly film it and to display it. Because once she's gone, if nobody takes care of the archive, if for any reason the archive end up in a bin or whatever, I'm quite happy to have had made 6 hours of footage of her, you know, of her and the archive.
Yeah.
And I'm quite happy to actually donate those 6 hours. Obviously here it's a version which is roughly 45 minutes,
yeah.
But I've got 6 hours of footage. And I'm quite happy then to donate that to the appropriate place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And how's the, talking about the appropriate place, how is the country? If you know, is Algeria interested in this material in terms of like it's a strong part of the history of the country?
Yeah, at one point, a few years ago, just after I made the piece, actually, the Ministry of Culture offered to buy the archive from Safia, but she refused because she was very worried that they will buy the archive and lose it somewhere. Or forget it somewhere, you know? So she refused to. And I think that was very wise of her.
Yeah.
I think she needs to find more like a private foundation.
Yeah.
I think it should stay in Algeria, me personally. I don't think it should go to France, for example.
That's the interesting aspect.
France has,
like,
what
happens if France then acquires the archive, which is a kind of like a paradox in a way,
yeah.
Or a contradiction to the...
Yeah. But to be honest, when you think about it, it doesn't matter who gets
yeah.
it. What's important, it's an archive that becomes accessible for people to research and study. I think So if it's French, I mean, I'd rather not, me personally, and her too, probably feel like that, because I think the French do have a lot of archive about that period of time. But if only France comes forward and does it well, why not?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's better than nothing. Because
yeah.
at the moment, even 6 years later, nobody has really contacted her about helping with the archive. A lot of people have contacted her to write about her husband.
Mm.
So they contact me and I put her in touch or things like that. So in that way, my project or my goal has worked in terms of raising visibility.
Yeah.
The work, Nazis work, is in few collections. So I feel I've kind of succeeded in kind of still putting Mohamed Kwasi in the collection somehow via my work. Obviously, what we want is actually the negatives, or you know, digitalize all the negatives. And so I'm talking at the moment with one or two person that might be interested. So we'll see how it goes.
On the more the structure of the work of your work, it's a 3-channel projection, and on 2 channels which run side to side, parallel to each other. And the other ones are runs on the other side. On the two ones that run parallel to each other, there's images of Safia talking about the archive and about her history, and then images of architecture, of interior spaces, the images that he had photographed.
Yeah.
How do you arrive to this structure, and how do you play around with how do you decide what to do?
So I've done the piece in two parts. So part one is this diptych, we can call it, and it's more personal. It's more about, you know, the death of her husband, and it's about her being alone, you know, she feels alone and how difficult that can be. She talks also about the struggle about having the archive and what to do with it. She says also she's very upset with her husband for not having told her what to do with the archive. She talks about also, she talks a lot about her husband. But what's interesting is when she talks about historical thing and the war, she talks in French, in a perfect French. And as soon as we talk about the personal, like her husband, Dave, she switches to Algerian Arabic, you know. So there is a very interesting dynamic that happens and that I didn't know of, you know, and that just happened. So that was interesting. For the interiors, you know, I did a lot of, obviously, shots. As I said earlier, I like to kind of, you know, mix the personal with... So I did a lot of, you know, close-up on her hands and necks, like you can see. And also, you know, the room, the tablecloth, the cup, the coffee we were drinking, the frames on the, in the cupboards or whatever. And the architecture of the flat itself, but let's not forget she's in Algiers and 80% of Algiers is French architecture now, because most of the Arabic architecture has been erased when the French arrived in 1830. So a lot of Algiers is basically a French city in terms of its architecture. So when you see the camera going through the living room, you can see it's very, very French. Yeah. Architecture, yeah. And I thought that was quite an interesting, also, you know, obviously dynamic in relation to the web. In the same way that when she speaks that perfect, very perfect French, which is what we call a colonial French, you know that she possibly had studied, you know, in Algiers, you know, which was rare because not many people had access to school at the time, but she did, you know.
Definitely.
And then the second part, it's a single screen piece, and it's what I call the more political one. And it has more like kind of very specific historical moment, events that happens, and like the section about art and resistance, and the other one is called Women at War, because there was a very important role of women during the Algerian War, and she talks about those three women who were supposed to be beheaded by the French, you know, guillotined by the French, and then were released. So, you know, so there are sections like that were kind of more, historical, I guess, you know.
I noticed also, you mentioned how she jumps between the two languages. I also noticed when she's in the more political, in the single screen, she also looks more tired in a way. And how was she on an everyday basis when you kind of like working with her, when you're going to the house, spending time with her? Because obviously having someone recalling all these memories is not always pleasant somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure for someone at that age, it can be also quite difficult to go back 30 and 40 years in time and bring everything back.
It is true that if you start looking at the video from beginning to the end, so those 45 minutes, you will see that when she starts, she's quite, you know, let's say fresh. And then as time goes by, she's starting to have, like, you know, bags under her eyes, and she's become really exhausted. Because it was, like you said, it was... I was really thoroughly asking questions, and she was, sometimes she had to make efforts to try to remember, you know, names of people on the photographs or places. So it did ask her a lot of concentration and you know, going back to, you know...
Personal history.
Yeah, personal history.
Memories.
And painful history.
Painful history,
you know.
Exactly.
At the same time, she was very happy to do it because she understood that it had to be done. But you see, I mean, physically she changed totally towards the end. She's kind of much more frail and much more tired.
Absolutely.
And we did, I think, the shoot, we did that in 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Which is quite intense.
Yeah.
It's not very easy.
Yeah.
I was quite struck by the presence of Mohammed is there in the architecture somehow in the interior shots. She describes her stories, she describes her memories. And then the interior shots is almost like, you know, this is no presence at all of human, but you can kind of feel that his presence is around. And I wonder, how does he maintain any photographs of him? Because obviously, like, there's so many photographs of his, of other people's situation, but how is her relationship with his memory?
Yeah. In the flat, there was no photograph of him.
Mm-hmm.
In the pile of archives, there is a photograph of him inside, you know. But in the flat, although, you know, he died, you know, a good, you know, 20 years ago, something like that, there was still kind of his presence, you know, the name on the door, you know, the entrance door and things like that. So there were, and I think that's one of the reasons also I wanted to film also the room, because you could feel that there was also, you know, him somehow, around. So yes, you know, there were some little markers in place. I can't remember what exactly in the cupboard and things like that would belong to him. I think there was a camera at one point also somewhere. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I could definitely be feel he was there, but I don't know if it's because I was kind of really entering the work quite deeply. But she kept also always bringing me back to him by saying, but I've done nothing, I'm nothing, he's the one, you know, why do you concentrate on me, it's him, you know, because she's such a modest person. And that's why I think the work also is, you know, works, is because for me, I mean, the Algerian, you know, war of independence in Algeria, you are bombarded by it, you are kind of hammered by, you know, nonstop everywhere, books everywhere, films everywhere, you know. And even, you know, 50, 60 years later, it's still very much a case.
Yeah.
And, you know, all those kind of mujahid, you know, that you see, for example, in the Battle of Algiers, they all wrote books now, they all, you know, give, you know, conferences there and there. But those people who actually also did the war were much more modest and much more, perhaps simple is not the word, but didn't become,
yeah,
you know, a personality after. I mean, they never told to tell the story, you know. And for me, it's very important to us. And I did previously a piece with my father and my mom, who were also Mujahid, and I asked them to speak about their role, which was perhaps little comparing to other people, but nevertheless, they were fighting the cause and in their own way, you know. And Safia was the same, you know. She might have been just an actress in a theater play, or, you know, or sewing some costume, because she was doing that also, sewing costume for the plays. She still mingled. I mean, she mingled, first of all, with a lot of people. Because we're talking about until 62, where the Algerian won its independence. But then he photographed all the 60s in Algeria, which was then the 60s where all the revolutionary groups were set in Algiers. So, you know, the Black Panthers were there, Fidel Castro, Che Guevara was there, obviously Frantz Fanon was there, Lumumba was there. I mean, all those kind of groups were in Algiers. And he mingled, and, you know, he was having coffee with Frantz Fanon and with, you know, Lumumba like that, you know, and that's quite interesting, you know. But nevertheless, this became quite simple and modest and didn't, you know, shout.
There's one line that is in the conversation, and you say to her, was he proud of what he was doing? And Sima says, like, he was not proud, he was happy.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, this kind of like idea of happiness, but also what you described as being part of a collectivity,
yeah,
rather than being part of, you know, being just an individual. Yeah. You're part of a wider, bigger cause.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I included that in this piece, but, you know, many times she kept saying, but it's nothing what we did, it's normal. It was normal. Mm. We were fighting for the cause.
Yeah.
I mean, she was like, it's not a big deal, you know? And, you know, and I was like, well, it's not a big deal. Yeah. But, you know, that's quite interesting. Perhaps we should show clips.
Yes, exactly. We can start with some of the clips, some of the, when you open the photographs, actually, which is quite interesting. Actually, it's the first time that it's been shown in London, right? That the work has not been shown in London before. So. This is when she's describing his death and after a long period of illness.
Pas dans les éloges parce que ça c'est grave. Ça c'est grave.
adopted child, so he's not there anymore.
I just wanted to ask you, based on what we just heard, her presence is very important, and for the, her knowledge is very important for the archive. She hasn't been through a process of cataloging anything.
No.
So everything is almost like in files, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So without her, it would be very difficult for someone else to understand parts of the story.
Yeah. But also, she doesn't know the story, because like she says, you know, she ended up having all those boxes.
Yeah.
She's sure that some were lost or thrown away.
Yeah.
Also, her husband didn't tell you. So when we were looking at some of the images, there were some images she didn't know. She discovered herself, you know.
Of course, yeah.
She knew sometimes who they were, you know. But she was like, oh, my God, I never realized my husband took photographs of him or whatever. So even her, you know, and that's why also it was quite tiring, because she was herself, perhaps for the first time since she got the archive, that she thoroughly looked through it with us, you know. And she was discovering, you know, yeah, some things. And some things she was forgetting. And
yeah.
She was getting really upset about not remembering anymore. There's still a lot to go through, you know. The part we did was only the part we could do in the few days I was there,
yeah.
And in terms of our own capacity, because as I was saying, it was quite, you know.
You mentioned that you worked with Amina.
Yeah.
Is Amina involved in any other way with the archive, or is there any kind of like...
Well, Amina is a very good friend of Safia,
yeah.
And that's why I decided to include her in the project, because I wanted to be behind to be able to film better.
Yeah,
to,
yeah, yeah.
But no, I mean, Amina hasn't... Yeah, I mean, she would do it if
yeah.
it needs to be done, but yeah,
yeah.
That's not her.
Yeah. So we'll see some more of the clips. So I wanted to... Says when you said that how he's still included in that. Can I stop you and ask you a question?
Because
I find something very interesting in what he says about the past and the future, and his obsession almost with the future rather than with the past. The whole kind of like political process that they went through, the kind of like war for independence, decolonization, is always like a futuristic project in a way, the kind of like establishing a new political domain. Do you think also this kind of like thinking is what functioned, or what was the reason that he never wanted to leave any information for his archive? Do you think he felt like his work was looking backwards rather than forward?
No, I think he really trusted his wife, you know, and she says it in the film. She says, you know, he thought Safia would sort it out. He didn't. And also because they're quite modest, he didn't think, you know, in some ways he had done what he had to do. He's photographed, you know. That was his way of fighting the war. And they won the war, so, you know. And it was a bit in that kind of spirit that it was, well, you know, it doesn't matter. And because if you remember, it's a very young state, you know, the Algerian state.
Right.
And so it's also a state, and also people are not used to knowing what it means to have archives and to,
exactly.
you know. And actually, it's a big problem now in Algeria, because a lot of the archive, even just in the cinema, you know, because Alger and La Cinémathèque d'Alger was one of the biggest cinema in the 60s in Africa. It was like really well known, and everybody, it was a hub with a lot of films to do the Algerian war. And all those films are lost now, you know? And a lot of those films were also made by Algerian filmmakers, not by just French, you know?
Yeah.
And all that is lost. So there wasn't this kind of culture of preserving.
Yeah.
You know, we won the war now, let's move on.
Yeah.
But, you know, we all know that it's a big mistake, because you cannot move on properly without
creating the
preserving
the history.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So this is a bit exactly the same mentality that Safia and him. I mean, Safia, I think, understands better now, because over the last 10 years she's been asked to provide some images by the government. You know, around the 5th of July, there is always, you know, like a big, you know,
presentation
of his work, you know, somehow. And, you know, so now she knows the value, you know, of she understands the value, you know. But
during the time that he was taking these images, particularly the images of you know, more known personalities who were present in Algeria, and we saw Che Guevara one of them, did the images ever found their way into popular media, into newspapers or magazines or anything like that?
And how did he deal with that? Work is quite interesting. Katia Kameli's work, I mean, unfortunately, with squatting her video screen, there is a really beautiful video here that she's showing, where she talks about this man who sells old postcards and photographs in the street of Algiers. And some of the photographs there, I know there are Mohamed Kwasi ones.
Oh, really?
But they've been now a part of the kind of the popular culture.
Yeah, yeah.
His name is not mentioned, people are buying it. I recognize it because some of them I saw in the box. And I was saying to her, oh, but do you know in the kiosk just down your street? And she was like, well, I'm not surprised, because people were just taking and copying and making poster and making postcards or whatever. But he was never credited for it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And,
wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, I can show you some, especially in that light box. There are a few that I've spotted who are his, you know.
Wow. And
so he was known. I mean, his images were known, but him, the person behind it, the photographer, wasn't known. You know.
Definitely. But for him, it's also somehow the camera was his weapon in many ways. Did he ever fight?
No.
So he was always behind with the fighters, though, but never really actually fighting.
I mean, she said that in the second part, when she said he was in love with this camera, and you know, he spent all his time with this camera, but he refused to fight, he refused to kill, and therefore, for him, his fight was to use the camera.
Yeah.
And therefore, that was also a very interesting concept, to also being able to fight with something else than just you know, guns and,
yeah,
you know.
I wanted to ask you about the second part, and which is more looking at the specific history, their own history, their own trajectory, and their own involvement in the revolution. And they, from my memory of it, is like that they were traveling quite a lot.
Well, they started in Paris, where he learned, he taught himself, he went to a photographic evening class,
mm-hmm.
where he learned. And then, like a lot, I mean, people don't realize, but the cause was also fought in France.
Mm-hmm.
There was also La Fédération de France, we call it, which was the FLN, but in France. So the provisional government had also power in France over the Algerian from the Fédération de France. And all the Algerian immigrants who were living there, they were all giving money, contributing to the war. So all that money from France, because they were immigrants, obviously they had a bit more money than the Algerian living in Algeria. So all that money that one put into a pot, and that pot was used to support the war and pay for the war. So they started in France before 1954. There were him and her living there. He was doing his class. She was doing a nursing, I think, if I remember, nursing
mm-hmm.
course. And then they got the call. They got the call to come. They come, but they had to go to Tunisia, not in Algiers. So, and then they explained how from they went through Italy, and there was a whole passage where she talks
exactly.
about Italy and the complexity and the codes and the passwords that they, you know, in order for them each time to kind of get to where they wanted to go, which was Tunis. And when they get in Tunis, she talks also about, you know, the ambience and the...
Were they ever persecuted in France? I mean, were they ever discovered that they were working on a kind of, like, revolutionary cells?
But she talks about it in the second part.
And
she does say, you know, we were all meeting in that place and, you know, it was safe and but once I came back, I can't remember exactly the story, she came back, you know, there to the meeting, but, you know, the French army had got there and had, you know... they were. I mean, yeah, the French were on the case, you know, they were... Although they were in France, they were still, you know, seen as fighting the French. So, but in that case, they didn't stay in Paris so long, so they ended up in Tunisia.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
that's where really the bigger action, if you want, or the
yeah.
more bigger action started.
Yeah.
She stayed in Tunisia. She didn't go to Algeria all that time, but he did go between Tunisia and Algeria.
Does he ever speak about how he felt when he was not there, when he was away, or, he, you know, because obviously if he was away documenting it, then...
Yeah.
the revolution, or if he was traveling to other places, she had to spend time on her own.
Yeah, she was very scared. She does say she was
yeah.
very scared
yeah.
because
yeah.
she never knew whether he'd come back or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she wasn't on her own because there was a whole community of other Algerians who were fighting the cause based in Tunisia. She was busy with the theater and all that. So there was a lot. The theater was only Algerian actors who were playing, and Algerian play written by Algerian writers, you know. So there was a huge community, and that's why up to now Tunisia and Algeria are very, very close to each other, you know, very linked. It was like a mini Algeria in Tunis, you know. And so she was on her own, and, you know, in the Tunisian and the Algerian, same language and culture, so... It wasn't like she was just left somewhere. But yeah, she does say that she was scared when he was going because, and she couldn't ask too many questions either because sometimes it was secret. He couldn't tell her where he was going.
How does he feel about the your installation, the work? What was her reaction when she obviously, like,
she hated
confronted?
It. She didn't hate the content. She hated seeing herself. She hated the fact that I've given... so much space for her in the project. She hated that I made a lot of close-up to her face. She was quite vain.
But your face is amazing because it's almost like history written all over it.
Yeah,
somehow.
But she couldn't look at it. You know, when I showed it to her, she was like, I can't look at it,
wow.
you know? Yeah. Because also she kept saying, it's not me, it's him. But I said, yeah, but you are him somehow, you know? He's not there anymore, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I cannot do a piece just with a photograph, you know? Could have used her voice as a
voiceover,
but I really wanted, for me it was important that she was there because she's a carrier, she's a keeper of this archive now.
Absolutely.
And unfortunately for her, she feels it's a burden, she feels it's too much, you know.
So we'll see some of that.
Okay. عام صيف عم جيت. فقلت له محمد نروح نشوف المقبرة قبل ما نروح. فجلس في المونتيش ماشي نتاعهم. لا يجيو واحد براني واحد ضيف ولا. إسحاق راك صاحت تماركة.
En Algérie, en
Algérie. Et le soir, on a eu tous les parents. Tous les parents. Alors bon, ils ont piétiné, les matelas partaient. Et moi, j'avais un sac. Et j'avais des adresses, un carnet d'adresses. On m'a redéroulé avec le carnet. Ah, pardon, ça y est, on a trouvé une aubaine. Parce que les carnets d'adresses, c'est le refaire. Bon, Baba avait une autre peur. C'est après qu'on l'a su. طلع معهم السالون يجو فيه لي ماتلا لي كوسين كلش ما لقاو وليه تحب تشوف واش كاين الداخل قالوا له وي بيان سور قالوا يسولي بهذاك لو بلاطو اي لو مي ايير من كان سي دون تيرميني يزو تروفي هذاك نتاع الصيادة اون كارتوش فيد او ساي ساي اون تروفي دي شوز انتريسونت الوغ تو موند سي مي دان اي يزو بلي مون كارني. J'ai ramassé tout de suite 30 dollars. Bad Kerahou, le cheval de Nazar, aucun savoir quoi, on a qu'un million en vente. Et il avait qu'un fatal de quoi, pas de sniwan. C'est pour ça qu'il prend les glaces comme ça, il le mettait ailleurs, il le remplaçait après. Mais il avait un sang-froid quand même, Mahavch. On ne peut pas dire que tu as peur, qu'on a peur, ou la trop. On y va en classe.
You can see how much more fragile it is here.
Yeah.
So we watch a little bit of the voyage because I think
it's quite long and complicated. Perhaps we should go to another part. Like perhaps the one Women at Who or the one, I don't know, there are so many other ones. But it's difficult because we don't even know. Ok, we can go there.
C'est une manière de lutter, c'est une manière de lutte. Et ça porte beaucoup. Une photo, bon, et après, c'est un souvenir. Après, tu te rappelles, longtemps que les choses sont passées, ça devient un souvenir. Mais là, quand tu n'as pas vécu et qu'on t'apporte la photo de ce moment-là, tu peux dire, oh là là, oui, voilà. C'est formidable la photo. Qu'est-ce qu'elle peut rappeler ou qu'est-ce qu'elle peut rapporter? Et penser que ça faisait partie de la révolution, que c'est une manière de lutter. Ah bah, vous êtes sûr, pour le que moi, je ne suis pas un homme d'art, mais. Même si je suis de fait cela, pour le mortel, ça, c'est pas mon fort.
C'est-à-dire le combat car comme il était plus normalement intellectuel et non c'est que dans le problème il était.
Ok, perhaps you can pass that. Want to go to another section, I suppose.
Yeah, maybe we can pause.
Okay.
I wonder if there's any questions.
Yeah, perhaps we should open to questions.
Yeah.
She doesn't know, and I don't know. People keep asking me. I just don't have a clue because she did show me a lot. There were boxes that, because also what we need, I need to explain also that, okay, he did also some important political photographs, even in the 60s it was really, you know. But then he decided to do a lot of photographs of the landscape of Algeria. And Algeria was French then at the time, and to be an Algerian, to travel in Algeria itself, in the desert or whatever, it was very complicated at the time. So as soon as the Algeria was free from the French, what he started doing, his dream, is to go and discover his own country. So he did. And so he went to the desert, he went to all the Roman ruins, and he just took photographs. And suddenly from political art, you know, political photograph, you know, of, you know, people and combats or whatever, or refugees or whatever, he started looking at landscape. So he has amazing slides. There were slides that were not black and white negatives or photographs. So there was boxes of also the slides, but that I didn't look at. Although now, thinking about it, it would be quite an interesting also thing to bring into the piece, because
I think it's very political what he did.
Exactly.
Also going to see the landscape and photograph.
And for the first time, an Algerian photographing its own country.
Yeah.
It was the only one. And they were like very kind of touristic photograph, you know, a guy on the camel, you know, in the desert, or, you know. But nevertheless, the importance and the time of it makes it
There's a sense of creating sense of identity there, and a sense of ownership, because that was obviously a new country that was not the previous conditions.
Yeah. And a new country, but a country that their Algerian
fought for.
Couldn't access.
Yeah, they couldn't.
So for the first time, they can actually access those spaces, you know.
Did he also do studio photography?
No.
What is the shop that he mentioned?
The shop is, it was mainly to develop process films.
Right, okay.
Yeah. But no studio photography, no.
I'm sure you've been asked many times, but had he taken any photographs of her during the time that they were working?
Of?
Her.
Of her, during the time.
There are some photographs of her, but many of players or with the troupe of actors, and you see her once or twice dressed up for play. Mm-hmm. But that's it, yes. I remember that the connection with Amina, that artist, that he took photographs of her parents when they married. So he did that, you know, in the 80s, he did like wedding photographs.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what he was doing in the shop. And that was a connection with Amina.
Yeah, yeah,
also,
yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
So, but that I don't have any, you know, it's not in the archive or in any ways, all those ones. So there must have been a lot of photographs were thrown away when they emptied the shop, for sure.
Were there any other photographers that he was connected to in Algeria, or he was kind of...
Okay, there is one more photographer of that period, and his name is... of course, it escaped. Anyway, but he was more of a cameraman.
Okay.
He worked on a lot of film of Vautier.
Yeah.
And he was a cameraman, and sometimes took some photographs, but he was mainly a cameraman. But he was Algerian. And I can't remember, Chamberly. Chamberly was his name. And but Chamberly died quite a while ago and doesn't have an archive.
What would be for her the ideal place for the archive?
I think she'd like it to be in Algeria, but, you know, in a university or something. But
is there a possibility for that? Are the universities interested in maintaining and preserving this?
They don't have the capacities, they don't have the finances, they don't have the place to the technical possibilities for it. So at the moment, no. There is only one leaf that got produced of his work, and you see it in the film, but it's all in Arabic, and it's very badly, the photograph are really badly reproduced, so and it's all in Arabic. I don't read Arabic, so I didn't read the content. But yes, there was no other book, so at the moment I'm talking to somebody possibly to do a book. I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but at least if there was a book, I'd be very happy, because I think
everything
that can be circulated.
Yeah,
and
at least you have some sort of material to document the archive itself.
Yeah.
Any questions?
What about the Fondation Arabe de Limoges?
I did contact them, but I don't know, they didn't seem to be too interested. But if they don't collect too, because it's seen as quite reportage type of photographs. They don't do reportage, la Fondation
pour le journalisme.
Yeah, photojournalism. They don't do that, really. They might change and do it, but at the moment, I was in Beirut last year, and I met them, and we spoke about it, and they were aware of his work because of my video. But they kept saying, yeah, it's possible, but I think it's not the style of photography they like.
We had
another
question here.
Yeah. Did she say interesting things? There's a kind of clash between a documentary style of filmmaking where you'd hope to get her saying, oh my God, I remember that, he came back bruised from that situation or something. But actually, you do it in a different way.
No, I do it both ways, actually, it's because you haven't seen... In the second part, the single part there, you actually see her getting some photograph and talking about who this person is, why this person was important, giving dates, names. The other part is much more... Yeah, I wanted to do something slightly different from the traditional, conventional interviews. Yeah. But yeah, she does do that a lot also.
So she remembers?
Yeah, most of the time she remembers, but yeah. Sometimes she's not sure, so she doesn't say, she says, I can't remember who that person is. No, I just forgot, you know, whatever. But Amina was quite good because Amina knows a lot about the, and she knew far more than I did about the history, probably because she lived in Algeria. She got bombarded by all those politicians. So sometimes she would tell her, oh, but this is this person. And she would say, oh, yes, of course it is, you know. So, and that's one of the reasons also I wanted to include Amina, because she knew a bit more than me. So she could, you know, target some questions, you know. Although I gave her a list of questions, she could still navigate with her in a way which I thought was more constructive, perhaps, that we didn't know anything about, yeah. Nothing. I've got quite a lot. I must have 100 images, perhaps, that I've scanned when I was there. But with, and you see it also in the video. You see me scanning. You see me showing her the process of scanning because she doesn't know what scanning and digitalizing is. So, you know, shipping is magic because suddenly the image appears on the computer after I scanned it and things like that. So I do have, but it wasn't the greatest scanner. Because it was only a scanner, you know, I bought there. You know, it wasn't a professional one. So I do have quite a lot that I've digitalized, but I don't think they're good enough to put in an archive, you know what I mean.
Are there any plans to put that on an online archive?
But I'm not going to do it, with the images I've got, because as I said, I don't think they're good quality enough. Yeah, that would be good to do that, but for that, somebody needs to find a fund to take, you know, to do the, it's costly. You need to do high resolution, you know, scans of perhaps 500 images, yeah? So that's very costly. There is places in Algeria you can do it, but it's just finding the finances to do it.
Beyond an institution or a university preserving the archive, has there ever been an exhibition of some of his work?
Yeah.
Was it after his death or was it during his life?
I think few during his life.
During his life.
And recently I've seen one, for example, at the MAMA, the Museum of Modern Art in Algiers. Mm-hmm. But often to do with a very specific event, you know, like, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Commemoration.
Yeah, a commemoration of something. No.
Yeah. So they're not treated as documents as such, but they're always connected to the event that they represent, rather than kind of like brought to a wider domain.
Yeah.
And is she going to these exhibitions? Right?
She does. Yeah, she
visits
their
works.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's still quite active, and she travels a lot, and she has managed to take the exhibition in a few places. I mean, some of the photographs were shown in Marseille in Zaya Rahmani's show that opened in January 2016. It was a big show on cartography, and she was there. She came, and the photographs of her husband were there. You know.
Yeah.
And she was there just to check everything was okay, and, you know. So she does travel when she can, and she's asked to.
I have two questions. I wanted to ask you if you actually failed yourself, and how did you build trust?
How do I?
How did you build the trust?
I went to film with the DOP I worked, you know, the camera woman I've been working with for the last 10 years now. But we did two cameras. We did a 16mm film and we did digital, and we ended up not using the 16mm film because it was too noisy, you know, the camera was too noisy. So I did a bit of the 5D, the digital filming. It was mainly Susie who did the rest. In terms of trust, I mean, before I got there, I went to see her many times. We spoke many times. And then, you know, she liked me, so she kind of, you know, she knew I was trying to help, you know. I mean, with the means I had, which is perhaps not huge means, but she understood that I was truly trying to help. So she became very open and very, you know.
Did you ever show her your other work? In that process,
I gave her a catalogue of my work.
And what did she think of that? How did that play a role in?
No, but she perhaps for her suddenly I was just not, you know, I was somebody a bit serious because I had a catalogue, you know, of And then I did show, I brought my laptop and showed her the piece with my father and my mom. I did a piece around the Algerian war with my dad, the other one, mother, father, and I. And I think she was very touched by the one of them, because my parents are more or less her age. They're talking also about the Algerian war. So she felt very touched. And she and also it looked like a documentary. So in her head, she was like, oh, if I would have shown some other work of mine, which is more kind of filmic and more, very different from that, perhaps she would have said, because for her, she thought like TV is going to be a documentary on TV, and I kept saying, no, it's not going to be a documentary on TV, it's going to be in a museum. She couldn't understand that concept, But yeah, I did show her the piece with my kids and my parents, and I guess she felt very at ease because I was doing a lot of things also around women, women issues or whatever, so she felt...
comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. What's wonderful is actually hearing about the process and how you actually build the whole piece, because we just see the piece and we don't really generally know how it's built up. But what interests me, and I know you've done work over the language, but what fascinates me is the way in which you have French, then you have this Algerian French, or French Algerian, and I know that you sort of do it with the subtitles, suddenly there's like two subtitles, and I know it's important.
Yeah.
But how does that then work when you're playing it somewhere where there's no French and there's no English? I mean, do you have sort of layers of subtitles?
No. For this piece, usually I would have done a French version with French subtitle for the time she speaks in Arabic and an English version. Mm-hmm. But for this piece, I decided to put both together, which was a bit of a nightmare because of the length of the subtitles, and hence why they're so small. It's actually much smaller than normal, because there is a norm in terms of subtitles.
Yeah.
So much, much smaller, because we wanted to fit those two languages in the
video. I think that's so important, because I know, having seen things, say, from the Middle East, from Palestine and Israel, and there's always that interest where, in fact, the Palestinians will speak either English rather than speaking Hebrew or Arabic, and often that doesn't come over, and it's quite difficult for people to actually hear the difference. But that's why I thought, I know it must be difficult, but at least having the two lines of subtitles at least gave a clue to that.
Yeah, because then you can, if you're an English speaker, you can suddenly realize that the French is not there anymore, so she must be speaking French, But sometimes it was difficult because she would start a sentence in French and finish it in Arabic, or vice versa, And I still, translated it because I thought, okay, I get it, I understand it. But for me also, it's a very good exercise to do, to kind of do all the translation. I do the translation myself. So it's a very good exercise because I learn so much about Algerian Arabic, or even French sometimes, and definitely about English. So.
And are they working towards going back to just Arabic, or do they remain with that sort of language?
You mean, no, the younger generation is... this generation, this is... They can't even... Her generation, they can't read and write Arabic. So she will read... In, for example, in Algeria, it's quite interesting when you go to cafes where you have older people who are over 65, let's say, they all read the French newspaper, all the Arabic newspapers, but written in French, all of them. But the young ones, they're all the Arabic ones, yeah. So it's quite interesting.
Yeah.
So that generation, that definitely might, because my parents don't read Arabic nor French, but that generation, because she was in Algiers in the capital, she had access to school. She can read and write French, but not Arabic.
But then it's pure Arabic rather than...
No, it's Algerian.
It's Algerian Arabic.
Yeah.
What does that mean with the French?
It's mixed, but not just with French, but also Berber language. It's a real mixture. Mm. It's a...
I was just wondering, like 60 years on, how much does the Algerian War for Independence feature in today's sort of mainstream discussions?
A hell of a lot still. I mean, I think it's a bit of a problem now, because it's like, it's almost they got stuck in 1962, and can't move beyond that, and we get the rhetoric all the time and about that, and that's why also Katia's piece is quite interesting here, because you can see it, and actually in her piece, people are saying, people are stuck into that period of time, and they don't seem... They're stuck into 62 or before, so they will buy a lot of Orientalist images also, or the one about the war, or the one because it was a very glamorous, amazing period of time, especially the 60s, you know, because as I say, it was like a place where so many foreigners were coming, a lot of revolutionary groups, where a lot of Africans, you know, the first African festival was in Algiers in 69.
Exactly.
It was a very, very big, one of the biggest in Africa was in Algiers.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of things going on. It was great, but, you know, that lasted perhaps up to the mid-70s, and then it kind of went downhill from there. So there is, yes, that thing where they keep talking, you know, about that, like there is nothing else, you know?
I wanted to ask you, did the Arab Image Foundation ever got interested in his work?
No, that's what he asked.
Oh.
And I said no. This
Sorry.
Man.
I didn't.
He asked, and I said that I was in Beirut last year.
Oh, yeah.
And,
Sorry.
No, I think it's too, as I said, it's too photojournalistic.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm hoping that the Tate or a few other places will buy a few images.
I wanted to ask you if you're planning to show the work here in London.
I'd love to, but I haven't had the opportunity. The problem when you do a certain amount of shows in London, it's very hard after to do some more because you kind of exhausted all the possibilities. And I've had a lot of shows in London, so who knows if there is, there might be a project in 2 or 3 years, and if that happens, I'll definitely put that piece in the show.
Great.
I'd like to ask you, could you show us a few more scenes from the film where we see some of the actual photographs, particularly from the time of the war?
Yeah, okay.
So
is this one?
Part, is it further down more?
I don't know, I can't remember, sorry.
So let's...
This is arrivé spontaneously.
That's him here with the camera. Oh, we've seen this one. You want to see some photographs, okay?
Yeah.
That was the first newspaper that came out. I mean, all those people that became very, you know, prominent figures in Algeria. Okay, and that's what we call the maquis, yeah? The women at war. La Ligne Maurice, that was what the French put between Tunisia and Algeria. Here he is again here. Okay. One more. Okay, he did take a lot of photographs also of the refugees. So the ones who were expelled by the French army from the village. The orphans, he did a lot of photographs of orphans during that time. I'm trying to find another part now. It's difficult because I don't remember where things are. Ah, okay, let's go this one.
Mais elle pouvait.
Jamila, yeah. So this is the girls who were in the Battle of Algiers, the scene where they go and put bombs in. Is that the girls? Yeah, and Jamila ended up marrying Vergès. This one was the first boat. And then that's all the photograph of the party on the 5th of July, 62. With where the first flag, the first Algerian flags, which was stitched by hand. So the quality is not great. Okay, and then towards the end, you can see a little selection of photo. Yeah. Was it before that or after? So Ben Bella who became the president, then Boumediene the second president. That was the president of GPRA, the provisional government, yeah. When they went to sign the ceasefire.